in our
we're interested
immigration and retirement benefits cases. I thought that's why everybody was here earlier. Singh versus Payne, Miss Wynn.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Joining me today at the counsel's table is my colleague Hillary Lee. If we boil this case down to its core, the question that we're asking this court to answer is this. If a non-citizen is unable to provide ICE with information and documents that are necessary for their removal, can that justify their continued detention under 1231A1C?
I have a record kind of concern about this case.
Sure.
And that is this. It seems to me that we have contested affidavits about what's going on here. ICE officer from which a fact finder could infer that the detainee is not cooperating, but the detainee has a declaration that says, look, I've given him everything I have, and I've done all I can do. This is all the information I have. That strikes me as the sort of thing that in the habeas context, the district court can't resolve on the papers. You have to have an evidentiary hearing to resolve that factual dispute. Because if we credit the declaration of your client, then it seems like that would have to be a good faith effort on your client's part. But it might be that a fact finder would credit the officer's testimony, but you can't do that just on the basis of affidavits. What do you say about that?
Well, I think, Your Honor, in this case, the affidavits are markedly different in their quality. And so the declaration that was submitted by the government was from an ICE officer who actually has no personal knowledge of our client's situation.
Is that apparent from the face of the affidavit that he does, that he lacks that personal knowledge?
It is, Your Honor. He states that the basis of his opinions or of his knowledge is his review of our client's file. And so what he submitted is a declaration where he says, I find this petitioner to be evasive, yet he's actually never even spoken to the petitioner.
Does he say that he's never spoken to the petitioner?
I think what the declaration says is, unless otherwise noted, then this declaration is based on my review of the records. And so,
yeah, that was my concern, though. I mean, it you could infer from the statement that that your client was evasive that it might be not just based on a review. It was just unclear to me from that declaration.
I do think that he makes clear that he bases the declaration solely on his review of the file. And if you look at the paragraph where he talks about our client being evasive, it follows a statement where he sets forth the fact that our client has returned travel document applications that are incomplete, which is not disputed but explained by our client.
Can I ask a question? I mean, so in paragraph 2 of your client's declaration, it says I have complied, which in a way is true. You've done everything, or he's done everything he was asked to do. But, you know, if you look at the statute, it says fails to make timely application for travel or other documents. And I guess what I don't quite understand, maybe you can fill in the gaps, is why that doesn't require him if he doesn't have a birth certificate, if he doesn't have a passport. This is not an unusual development. People lose these things all the time. He may not know where his parents are, but he knows where the capital of India is. And the good faith requirement is here is to apply for a new passport, a new birth certificate, whatever it is that's required. So I'm struggling with how I don't get the fact dispute on that, because you didn't put that at issue. There's nothing in here that says he did apply to the government of India for this, and they said, hey, you're out of luck, we've lost your records or something. So I don't understand how you've complied with the statute on that front.
Your Honor, this case was filed pro se by the petitioner, and I took it up on appeal. And so what we have here is admittedly a scant factual record. But what we do have is a declaration where somebody is, where our client is saying that he complied to the best of his ability. And
I'm agreeing with everything you're saying and Judge Pryor's saying. I take it at face value. He doesn't have it. It's quite understandable. It's been years. It's a little sketchy about not knowing where the parents are, but, you know, sometimes my kids get annoyed with me and they might answer it that way. But who cares about the parents? Just apply to the government of India. He can find the capital of India and the address. I don't understand why the statute doesn't require that.
I think what we're lacking here, though, is the district court never actually made that ruling. The district court never says this petitioner fails to comply with the statute because he's failed to take those additional steps.
I would just say any error you have is harmless until you can explain why this is just such a basic step. You just apply for it. And then once you've applied, you know, God knows how long it takes. I mean, it's probably like our country. It may take forever, in which case it's all good faith and, you know, everyone's trying to do the best they can.
Well, Your Honor, I think...
But if he hasn't applied, my real point is if he hasn't applied, I do not see any way in which he can be released. That doesn't make sense to me at all, given the statute.
Well, Your Honor, I think actually what happens when a travel document application is submitted, then what you're not applying necessarily for a birth certificate, but I think what's included in the travel document application is essentially asking for a passport or some sort of document that allows you to actually travel to India. And so the problem here has been he doesn't have the requisite information biographically in order to completely fill out that application.
What do you mean by that other than a phone number? So phone number's one thing. What else do you mean by that, that he couldn't fill out and he can't try to get?
Phone number is one thing. Also, a last known address of a contact in India. And my client is somebody who left when he was 5 years old and who has spent most of his entire adult life incarcerated in the U.S. He does not have contact with his family in India anymore. And this is not a situation that is actually unique to him. And if there's not some sort of limitation to when 1231A1C should apply, and that limitation should be it applies when there's clear evidence that the petitioner is acting willfully to obstruct their removal, then there could be thousands of non-citizens who would find themselves in this same holding pattern.
We'll see what the government says about that, but I suspect in the absence of a phone number, in the absence of an address, when it's been this long, I'd be quite surprised if that stops things. I mean, and that's why the affidavit focuses on passports and birth certificates. It doesn't say anything about phone numbers and the other information, and I suspect that's because that's not going to shut down one of these travel applications. And what's shutting it down are these government documents, which it seems to me he should apply for.
Well, if I may, Your Honor, he has, I think this is an interesting point that you're bringing up because there are facts that have now occurred and that we could put in the record, but they're not before this court. But what we
know from this record that he hasn't applied. I mean, I read his declaration. He said, I complied with all requests for information that I'm able to comply with. This gets back to my concern about resolving this just based on these declarations. It's not clear to me just how broadly to construe that. And to the extent that there's a conflict in the declarations, it seems to me it would require, I mean, just like basic habeas precedents of our court would require an evidentiary hearing.
I understand that, Your Honor, and I would agree if the district court didn't have enough to actually make that determination about who to credit, whose declaration to credit, then I do think it would be error for them to make this legal conclusion without holding an evidentiary hearing to see which witness is more credible. But I think at the end of the day, this opinion as written cannot stand because it's not clear that they made that factual finding.
Do you have any questions?
No.
Do you have any?
Thank you.
Okay, let's hear from Ms. Holt.
Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court, Elizabeth Holt for the government. The district court's denial of Mr. Singh's 2241 petition should be affirmed for two reasons. First, Mr. Singh filed his 2241 6 months and 5 days after his order of removal had become administratively final. In doing so, he did not meet his burden to show a good reason to believe he was significantly unlikely to be removed in the reasonably foreseeable future.
What do you say about what I've raised? I mean, he files a declaration. He says, look, I've complied with all the requests for information that I'm able to comply with. And it just strikes me that the district court discredited that and credited instead the officers. Declaration, and I don't see how you can do that.
Your Honor, two things. Directly to that question you have, the government would assert that based on the petition that Mr. Singh filed, then the government's declaration, then the court issued an order telling Mr. Singh he could respond, obviously, to the declaration, but he had to provide facts. He could not just make mere allegations. And then Mr. Singh provided a response.
I've read his declaration. It has facts.
Your Honor, it does have some facts. With that respect to a failure to comply or 1231A1C analysis, though, he states in his reply, for example, he does not have missing information, including a phone number. Then he turns over to his declaration, and he states, I don't have a phone number. He does state, you're right, that whenever possible, he has complied. He hasn't been evasive, but he doesn't provide beyond stating that I've been asked for a phone number and I don't have it. I don't have a passport.
He says I don't have a passport. He says a lot of things.
Your Honor, you're correct. I was about to say that he also does say he does not have a passport. He does not have a birth certificate. He does not have a phone number. However, there's clearly he does not provide the district court with any information of how he has complied, what he has done. For example, has he applied for a new passport? Does he have any additional immigration documents? Well, he does state he does not have that. I apologize. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Your Honor. I apologize.
If the district court were to credit this declaration that he's given them all the information that he's able to give them, how could the district court rule for the government?
Your Honor, if the district court were to credit the declaration and believe everything that Mr. Singh stated and that he acted in good faith, you are correct. Presumably, then
the district court had to discredit.
Yes, Your Honor, the district court did discredit.
Did the district court do that?
By the fact that this government's declaration did state that he had been evasive with respect to his answers, and he was not
crediting one declaration over another. Can you do that without an evidentiary hearing?
Well, Your Honor, under the
can I make a friendly amendment to your last answer, or at least what I suspect is what I suspect was your what the answer you meant to give, which
yes,
is
Your Honor.
Here's the key statement: it is impossible for me to comply with an impossible request. Okay, that's the key thing there that really makes you wonder about this. If that's backed up by facts, I think we're very much in the game of these are two opposites, and how can you decide one just on a paper record, which is Judge Pryor's question. But that's just a conclusion. There's no fact here at all that says, here's what I tried to do to find my parents' phone number. Here's what I tried to do to find my old address. Here's what I tried to do to get my new passport. Here's the application. Here's a copy of the application. Here's what I tried to do to get my birth certificate. So I think what you mean to be saying is, that's what's missing here. All you have is a conclusion. It's impossible, was zero explanation of what he tried to do.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. That's what I was attempting to say. Thank you, Your Honor. The government's position is that Mr. Singh's declaration is conclusory.
Yeah, so we have a person in detention. He says a little bit more than that. I mean, he says, look, it asked for a phone number. I've not been in India in decades. I don't have a phone number. Don't know anyone's phone number. As a result, I'm unable to answer the question asking for a phone number. I was never evasive regarding the whereabouts of my birth certificate, passport, and location. I simply don't know the information they're requesting. I don't have the documents they want me to produce. I complied with all requests for information I was able to comply with. Now, could he maybe say more? Yeah, but if you credit every bit of this, it's not just it's impossible. At the beginning of the declaration, there's a lot more here. If you
I don't know where the library in the 11th Circuit is, but I'll bet.
Don't worry, nobody goes there.
All right, back to Mr. Singh,
Your Honor. Your Honor, under the Zadvedas analysis, it is the petitioner's burden to show two things: first, that they have been detained for 6 months or longer, and then second, that they must provide evidence of a good reason to believe that there's no significant likelihood of removal in the reasonably foreseeable future. In order to prove that six-month period, the burden is on the petitioner to prove that they are actually in the six-month removal period and beyond that period. And so the burden is on Mr. Singh to provide some of the exact information that you all are questioning. He can say, I wasn't evasive. He can say, I've complied as best as I can, but he hasn't provided anything to the district court to say what exactly he has done.
He's provided examples. He's provided examples of what he hasn't been able to do. So you're saying this unrepresented, detained immigrant, who's in ICE detention, is to be faulted and discredited because he didn't say more?
Your Honor,
he didn't provide more examples of what he's done, more specifics about it?
But Your Honor, he didn't provide specifics about the cooperation that he has undertaken with ICE. It is in part the alien's duty or job to cooperate with ICE. That is the structure of the statutes and the regulations. And yes, he is pro se, yes, he is detained, but under the Zadvydas, the burden has been placed on the petitioner.
Right, so the district court credited the declaration of the officer that he had been evasive.
Yes, right? Your Honor.
He states in his declaration, I haven't been evasive.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So the district court just credited one declaration over another. Can you do that in habeas without an evidentiary hearing?
I believe that the district court also credited the statements that he continued to...
Let's just focus on that one.
Just the evasive.
Because the district court credited that one, as you agree. I don't think that you can reasonably dispute that.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Can you do that? Without an evidentiary hearing?
I believe at some point, depending on what you are weighing, you would need an evidentiary hearing. In this case, the district court had other facts before it, so it properly concluded it did not need an evidentiary hearing. If this court, however, were to decide that, in fact, there should have been an evidentiary hearing, then the government believes that the proper decision then would be to remand this case back to the district court
and allow for additional fact-finding. Excuse me, why can't the ICE officer ask all these questions of the individual? Is there any reason that's prohibited? Is that a problem? You need counsel? What I'm trying to figure out is why his declaration is so vague. I mean, it seemed very easy for him to interview this applicant and say, okay, I get it. You haven't been there for a while, but what have you tried to do? Have you thought about applying for a passport or a new birth certificate? Did that conversation not happen? Is there a reason that can't happen?
Your Honor, in this case, the individual who filed the declaration was a supervisory detention and deportation officer. And petitioners are correct that what the declaration states is that he reviewed the file and ICE computer database.
Okay, so I got it that that didn't happen. I'm asking why it can't happen. Am I missing some administrative problem with, you know, if you're going to file an affidavit about this person and you're inclined to think the gamesmanship going on, why not just interview the person? Just tell us what you did. It's very simple.
Well, Your Honor, one reason, I do not know exactly why that happened in this case or why this declaration.
But there's no reason in general you can't do that.
I would not think so, Your Honor. However, I will say in this case, if you go back to the actual 2241 petition that Mr. Singh filed, he never brought up this idea of cooperating or failure to cooperate. He stated in his 2241 that his removal order became final on April 19th of 2018, that 6 months have passed, ICE has not obtained travel documents, and India will not accept me. In response, the government provided a declaration, responded to those exact statements, stating that the Indian consulate is unable to issue a travel document without a complete and accurate travel document application, and India has not declined to issue a travel document.
That's one other question I was just curious about. When you look at this missing information, a phone number, an address, passport, birth certificate, is it really true that if you don't check every single box, the travel application can't proceed? Because I would have guessed a missing phone number. That seems hard to believe that would stop it. What's indispensable and what's not is what I'm getting at.
Your Honor, that is not in the record as to what exact questions and answers were provided in the travel document application or anything
else. No,
I'm
asking you something you don't need to know what was in. I'm asking you what really has to be there, or is it really just a bureaucratic rule? You have to answer every question or else we don't move it to the next stage.
Your Honor, my understanding is more that it may differ depending on the country. And so in that case, that's not, the government will admit that
more
the travel
information,
document
more,
application
that could
is
be
not
more,
in the record.
More information, here. More information on remand, I guess.
Yes, Your Honor. If this were to be remanded, that is certainly information that could be developed. The government, however, would submit that even if we assume Mr. Singh did cooperate here, that the district court's decision can still be affirmed. And that is because Mr. Singh did not meet his burden to provide evidence of a good reason to believe that there's no significant likelihood of his removal in the reasonably foreseeable future.
I have a question about that, because Officer Pittman's declaration is now more than 2 years old. In your view of the world, are we just frozen in time? As long as Officer Pittman says at some point he's going to be removed in the reasonably foreseeable future, we just accept that even as the years go by?
Your Honor, this court is somewhat frozen in time from a practical matter because the evidence before this court is correct several years old. However,
so you come back 2 years from now, he's still sitting there, and you still say he's going to be removed in the reasonably foreseeable future, and we just have to go, okay.
Your Honor, 2 points. Number one, the recourse for the petitioner is to file a new 2241, and in this case, he actually has done so, and I believe petitioners reference the fact that there's more information now. So the recourse for any petitioner is to file another 2241. There's not a limit on that.
That make this one moot?
Yeah.
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
My understanding is it does not. Because this court can still rule on this, this appeal, and while the government would certainly disagree, could in fact disagree with the district court and order Mr. Singh's removal. My understanding is the current 2241, there's been briefing as to whether or not to stay it, pending the outcome of this appeal. However, an order has not been entered. But as the years go by, the recourse for a petitioner is to file another 2241.
I have a kind of a practical question, just to make sure I understand it, about a United States Code 1231A1C, where it talks about make timely application?
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, as a practical matter, I mean, you don't rely on the detained immigrant to make that application. That's something that ICE does, right?
Your Honor, my understanding is that the detainee, the alien, actually does have a duty to take some affirmative steps. However, ICE is there and the deportation officers are there, and they absolutely also take steps to obtain documents, to reach out to the
country. But they provide him with the application. I mean, he's not in charge of kind of coming up with that on his own, right?
My understanding, Your Honor, is that ICE would provide him with the application, and the declaration here does state that petitioner was given travel document applications to fill out. So my understanding is that, yes, that would come from ICE and the deportation officers, and they gave that information to us.
And again, just to follow up on Judge Pryor's point, I mean, we don't know what parts Mr. Singh was able to contribute to and what parts he was. I mean, we don't know what that looks like, right?
Correct, Your Honor. That is not in the record.
Tell me this about this other habeas petition. It's news to me. Is it pending in front of Judge Proctor?
Your Honor, my understanding is that it is not, that it was assigned to, I believe, Judge Bowdry, and the magistrate judge, I believe, on both cases is Judge England. So Judge England being aware that there was another case out there.
What happens when you get opposite rulings on two 2241s of the same person?
Well, Your Honor, the 2241, as I said, is a moment in time. So this appeal, this court could affirm the district court.
Well, no, but I mean, you can call it moment in time, but the judgment is to get out. It's
yes,
about
Your
release,
Honor.
And so you could have opposites. So I don't understand how you can have two pending about the same person against the same government.
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Singh's current 2241 in the district court is pending. No decision has been issued. So if this court were to overrule the district court and say Mr. Singh should be released, he is released,
right,
and that 2241 is gone.
That becomes moot.
Tell me this, Your Honor, though.
But if we, let's say we vacated the order of the district court and remanded for an evidentiary hearing, is there any reason why everything that is the subject of the second habeas petition couldn't become part of that proceeding as well? In other words, the alien could move to amend the habeas petition and bring it all in.
Your Honor, I assume that one or both parties would do that. I certainly cannot promise you. I'm not
the person. My understanding, though, is Judge Bowdry's case has been stayed pending the outcome of this appeal.
Your Honor, my understanding is that Judge England, the magistrate Judge England, had the parties brief whether or not it should be stayed. Those
and that's
briefs
really
were,
the only thing that's happened?
Yes, Your Honor. That those briefs have been filed, but no order has been issued.
Okay.
I do believe there has been some sort of discovery or development of the record. My understanding is Mr. Singh is represented now before the district court, so I think there will be some additional development of the record versus in this case.
While we're on the subject of other cases, the Ninth Circuit stuff is done.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Is the Ninth Circuit case done?
Oh, yes, Your Honor.
That one's done. Okay.
Excuse me. The Ninth Circuit case is done and yes, has been done. And mine, okay. I don't believe Mr. Singh has filed anything more from that.
Okay, great.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, Ms. Holt, let's hear some rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, I want to go back to this question of the burden of the petitioner to put more facts into the record. And on that, I do want to point out again that the petitioner is detained and is not a native English speaker and was unrepresented. And in fact, when he filed the habeas, it was actually the government who responded first and put the ICE officer's declaration in the record saying you're not entitled to habeas relief because you're not complying. And in that declaration, they put very vague facts about why he wasn't complying. And so in responding to that, the petitioner is actually at a disadvantage to know what it is that the government is saying he's not complying with. And so the fact that he talks about a phone number, he's simply responding to what was already put into the record and argued against him. And so the government here, from a practical standpoint, has a lot more access to information and a lot more access to tell a court why it is that this that the petitioner is not complying and why they don't meet 1231A1C.
How about hypothetically, two parts of the hypothetical. Hypothetical part number one is you can't get released today from this court. Hypothetical point number two, you can get back to the district court for more fact-finding. If those two facts are true in the future, what do you want? Do you want to be in this case or do you want to be in the other case?
The one in front of Judge Bowder.
You can't ride both horses, right? You're not going to proceed in front of both judges at the same time under my hypothetical.
I would think you would want the quickest resolution. I mean, that's what Mr. Singh wants. He's been waiting for.
So which, years, so which is faster?
I think it would be faster for this court to reverse the district court.
Challenging the hypothetical.
Do you remember his hypotheticals? Yeah. Except one and two.
Okay. I mean, it's not all in her control, right?
No. Just what do you want if it's one and two, though?
I'm sorry. What are my two options?
You don't have options. You got two facts. One, he's not going to be released by order of this court.
By this court.
Right.
Just yet.
Sure.
It's going to go back to the district court. What do you want then? Do you want Judge Bowdery's case? You want Judge Proctor's case? What do you want?
I would want it remanded with the instruction to have an evidentiary hearing.
Before Judge Proctor?
I think the cases would have to be consolidated.
Yeah.
I don't know what the rules would be for that and if
well,
it goes
that,
with
that.
That
would be something maybe you could do. Move to consolidate them in the district court. That's really, the other case isn't before us, but you would want us to send this one back for an evidentiary hearing, is what you're saying?
I would think that an evidentiary hearing is necessary if they're going to discredit our client based on the declarations. And I did want to respond to the fact that it is not frozen in time, and so that's why these cases are different, but we do think that there was enough in the record on this initial habeas for the government or for the court to rule in favor.
Is there any reason why the first filed rule shouldn't apply and you just amend? If this were sent back for an evidentiary hearing, you would amend the habeas petition in this case to bring into it anything that is purportedly the subject of the second habeas petition and just have it done all in one case?
I would want it done. I think if this court is inclined to remand it, then I would think it should be done all in one case.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And what mechanism that would take place in, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
I think we understand your case. Bearden versus